brisk autumn night in front of the White House, but for protesters, heated passion over the constant bombardment of Gaza.
Nerveen Adwan says she fled Gaza 20 years ago, but now her heart is there with her people.
People are not allowed to travel, are not allowed to find food. There is no food, there's no water, there's no medicine. And the people who seek medicine and cure in the hospital, they got killed.
Demonstrators gathered here focused on reports that an Israeli airstrike on Tuesday killed hundreds of people at a hospital. The death toll, the highest of any single incident in Gaza in recent days, triggering protests there and around the world.
Protests have been happening across the country both day and night. Most people outraged over the climbing death toll, not to mention the growing humanitarian crisis affecting the most vulnerable.
Many here angered by United States' alignment with Israel and its president, Joe Biden, calling him complicit.
He can go to hell, to be honest with you. Like the Americans have never been on the side of Palestinians, and they never will be. And he's just aiding Israel. He's just empowering Israel to move on and to continue their war efforts.
Others say legacy media are also to blame.
The mainstream media is directly culpable and directly responsible for these deaths. They have done everything from platform Israeli officials to spew their pure hatred unchecked.
Israel is a apartheid state!
These demonstrators are demanding a ceasefire in Gaza. They say they hope for the best, but expect the worst.
It's our land. Where else to go?
Colin Campbell, Washington.
As the Israeli war on Gaza rages on, a vigil in London to remind Palestinians they're not alone. The mood is somber. Some here have lost loved ones in Gaza.
I have family in Gaza, some of extended family that have been martyred, family, friends who are also gone, direct family that's been displaced. It's heartbreaking.
This is beyond, it's absolutely like terrifying and horrific that we are here at this point, just free Palestine.
Across from the vigil, the office of the UK Prime Minister, whose government's unfettered support for the Israeli regime, amplified by the UK's mainstream media, is not lost on the vigil goers.
What we have here is a media that is discriminatory, that is explicitly valuing the lives of Palestinians less than Israeli people. We have reports, there are studies. Each death of a Palestinian generates 1/7 the media of a death of an Israeli. And it's clear that in this conflict that there is a distortion of facts, that we have a set of reports that come out of Israel and a set of reports that come from Palestinian people. They are not treated the same. We treat the Israeli reports as fact, even though they have one of the worst track histories. And we treat the Palestinian reports as a likely falsehood, as something sketchy, as information that we don't trust.
Support for the Palestinians comes under a deteriorating climate for human rights activists in Europe. Just last week, the UK Interior Minister told police carrying the Palestinian flag may be a criminal offense. At the time of this report, Israeli bombardments of the Gaza Strip have killed over 3,000 Palestinians and injured more than 11,000 others.
It's been several days of horror for Palestinians in Gaza, several days of heartbreaking images pouring in, and several days of agony for the people here in the UK and across the world who feel powerless to stop the Israeli carnage. To them, this is about remembering those who were murdered and praying for the survivors. Saipur is up, London.
From the river to the sea,
anger is boiling in the streets of Pakistan over the United States and Israel. In a fiery expression of outrage, Pakistanis set ablaze the American and Israeli flags, signaling their vehement disapproval of their policies towards the innocent people of Palestine.
Anybody who denies the Holocaust whether in North America or in Europe, is sent to jail. It is a crime. What Israel is doing is no less than a Holocaust in Palestine.
This is the greatest tragedy that Israeli aggression is being backed by the United States and other Western countries. I think that's the time the world should protest against what Israel has been doing over the last 50, 60 years.
Political leaders, human rights activists, and religious scholars united in Islamabad for a series of rallies to condemn Israel's actions in Palestine. They marched in the streets and raised their voices to the world to play its role in stopping Israel from killing innocent men, women, and children in the Gaza Strip on a daily basis.
We are here to protest against the Israelis and anybody who's supporting them right now, be it Muslim leaders or America or anybody. And I would like to tell people that the word is not oppression anymore. The word is genocide. They're literally cleansing Palestine by killing their children specifically.
The rallies were marked by passionate speeches and powerful slogans as the diverse group of attendees came together to demand justice and peace for Palestine.
Unfortunately, the organization of the Islamic country is condemning the action of the Israel. They are not taking any action. I think that they should announce sanctions against Israel. If they are not in a position to impose sanctions on Israel, they should disband the OIC.
The protesters were also calling for Israel to lift the Gaza blockade and reopen routes for humanitarian aid.
These rallies indicate the growing frustration and anger felt by many over continued violence and the lack of international intervention to protect the lives of thousands of innocent Palestinians besieged by Israeli forces. Nasik Azmi, Islamabad.
Mother, the symbol of love and peace, she cannot stay at home and be a bystander when she sees the disturbing images of murdered children. So, Iranian mothers with their children gathered at Mother's Square in Tehran to express sympathy with Palestinian mothers and children. They say that the only thing they can do today is to come to the streets and be the voice of the oppressed.
We have witnessed heartbreaking scenes in the past few days, such as children waking up to find their homes destroyed and searching for their mothers. During these moments, all we could do was cry. Perhaps these gatherings can help awaken public conscience and draw the world's attention to Gaza.
I asked her why she has brought her daughter to this gathering.
I brought my daughter because I think that from this age, she should be able to develop a sense of sympathy so that when she reaches adulthood, she will not be indifferent to what is happening in the world.
I asked her how she felt about the recent events in Palestine as a mother. Tears welled up in her eyes.
We have come here today to support the Palestinian people who are being martyred. We cannot watch our brothers and sisters in Gaza being unjustly martyred and remain indifferent.
I know it was my duty to come here to sympathize with Palestinian children. I cannot imagine what is happening to Palestinian mothers. It is very sad.
Today, mothers around the world play a significant role in teaching their children about the Palestinian cause.
A wave of protest has been ignited across the occupied West Bank as the world continues to watch fresh videos of new massacres committed by the Israeli regime in the besieged Gaza Strip. This time, the anti-Israel protests flared after an Israeli airstrike targeted Al Ahli Baptist Hospital in Gaza. The raid killed hundreds of people, including children and women, who were sheltering at the hospital amid intensified Israeli airstrikes.
The attack on the hospital is terrifying and dangerous. It's an aggression against humanity. There were innocent children, women, and the elderly, as well as sick people, and hundreds more who came here to the hospital thinking it was going to be a safe shelter. The attack on the hospital tells the world the truth, which is we are the oppressed people. We are the ones being attacked and not the opposite.
The Israeli army is targeting every Palestinian thing. They lie. They're not only targeting Hamas or the Islamic Jihad. They're targeting all the Palestinian factions. They're killing innocent people. And here we have to say our occupier is one, and we must all together fight this enemy.
The protest in the occupied West Bank took place while U.S. President Joe Biden was on a visit to Tel Aviv, during which he met with Israel's so-called war cabinet. Israel's so-called war cabinet consists of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, the Minister of Military Affairs Yoav Gallant, and Benny Gantz, a senior opposition figure and former Minister of Military Affairs. During the visit, Biden reaffirmed his support for Israel. Amid global outrage, Biden also tried to defend Israel, saying it was not responsible for the hospital attack. He instead blamed the attack on the Palestinians themselves, saying it was done by, quote, the other team.
It's not weird at all. One criminal is supporting another criminal. Since day one, he has believed Israel's fabricated lies regarding the beheaded babies, the story that was later revealed to be a mere lie. Today, he's standing with the aggressor premeditatedly, regardless of what level the Israeli crimes have reached. They are acting the same as Hitler did.
Following the hospital massacre, a four-way summit that was scheduled for Wednesday in Jordan was cancelled. Biden was supposed to meet King Abdullah, as well as Palestinian Authority President Mahmoud Abbas and Egypt's President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi during the summit. Abbas returned to Ramallah after the hospital attack and declared a three-day mourning and ordered the flags to be flown at half-mast. He called the attack a hideous war massacre that cannot be tolerated.
These protests, Palestinians say, are the least to express their sadness and anger at the Israeli massacres while genocide is being carried out in Gaza. U.S. President arrives in the region to express his support for Israel. Palestinians say he's complicit with Tel Aviv's regime. Mona Qandil, occupied Ramallah.
European Council President Charles Michel chaired an emergency video conference of EU leaders on Tuesday night to discuss the Middle East crisis. Michel was asked after the meeting if Israel has broken international law by bombing a hospital in Gaza City, resulting in a huge number of deaths.
We got this information when we were together doing this virtual meeting with the leaders. It seems to be confirmed, and an attack against a civilian infrastructure is not in line with international law.
Seconds later, European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen offered this response.
I need confirmation. I cannot comment at this moment.
Von der Leyen is facing criticism over her apparent biased handling of the crisis in favour of Israel. The President of Ireland, Michael D. Higgins, seen here meeting von der Leyen at the end of last year, claims she has engaged in a, quote, thoughtless and even reckless set of actions. Von der Leyen has previously accused Moscow of committing war crimes for depriving Ukrainians of water, electricity and food. She won't make the same claim with respect to Israel's actions in Gaza. Her spokesperson has been asked why.
Israel has a right to defend itself in line with humanitarian international law. We are monitoring the situation. We're in contact with our partners.
Experts say EU leaders face potential political and security consequences unless they move to stop Israel's onslaught.
If you listen carefully to the rhetoric of Benjamin Netanyahu, some people say this is going in the direction of ethnic cleansing. So the European Union should pay careful attention that this is going to be contained.
Critics say it's incredible that EU governments and authorities are refusing to apply any pressure on Tel Aviv to stop. Von der Leyen is due to be quizzed in the European Parliament on Wednesday. A majority of lawmakers will support her position on the Middle East crisis, but she'll certainly face a tough time from a sizeable minority. Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
This is IRIB English Radio.
IRIB English Radio, with you every single moment.
Of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Praise belongs to Allah, who allowed none to witness when He created the heavens and the earth, and who took no helper when He authored the spirits. He has no associate in divinity and no support in unity. Tongues fall silent before the limits of describing Him. Intellects fail before the core of knowing Him. Terrents fall low in awe of Him. Faces are humbled in fear of Him. And everything mighty yields to His mightiness. So to Thee belongs praise again and again, well measured, continually and methodically. And may His blessings be upon His messenger endlessly, and His salutation everlastingly, eternally. O Allah, make the beginning of this day of mine righteousness, its middle prosperity, and its end success. I seek refuge in Thee from a day whose beginning is fright, and whose middle is anxiety, and whose end is pain. O Allah, I pray forgiveness from Thee for every vow I have vowed, and every promise I have promised, and every pledge I have pledged, then failed to keep for Thee. I ask Thee concerning the complaints of Thy servants against me. If there is a servant from among Thy servants, of a handmaid from among Thy handmaids, who has against me a complaint, because I have wronged him in respect to himself, his reputation, his property, his wife or his child, or because evil words I have spoken about him in his absence, an imposition upon him through inclination, caprice, scorn, zeal, false show, bigotry, whether he be absent or present, alive or dead, such that my hand has fallen short and my capacity has been too narrow to make restitution to him or to annul my obligation to him, I ask Thee, O He who owns all objects of need which are granted by His will and hastened to His desire, that Thou blessest Muhammad and the household of Muhammad, peace be upon them, and makest the one I have wronged satisfied with me in the manner that Thou willst, and givest me mercy from Thee. Forgiveness decreases Thee not, and giving injuries Thee not. O most merciful of the merciful, O Allah, give me on every Monday two favors from Thee: the facility to obey Thee at its beginning, and the favor of Thy forgiveness at its end. O He who is Allah, and none other than whom grants forgiveness for sins.
This one lay. Doing us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
Hello and welcome to Spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Thanks so much for being with us. 2 weeks have passed since the Israeli regime launched its genocidal attacks on the residents of the Gaza Strip. More than 4,300 Palestinians have been killed, with 1,756 of them being children and 976 of them women, as Western regimes continue with their support of the apartheid regime. Increasing numbers of people in these countries are taking to the streets and saying enough is enough, condemning the Israeli regime and demanding an end to the violence. Is the regime starting to lose control of the narrative, which is so important for it to always be portrayed as the victim? More and more people from countries around the world, and also those countries where their governments actually are supporting the Israeli regime, people are starting to show that schism, that divide between their perspectives and their governments. Now, we have seen the United States, of course, come out very strongly in supporting the Israeli regime throughout this onslaught, despite that over 4,000 Palestinians have been killed. And I think that the sheer numbers are actually what are bringing people out on the street, and also the blanket support, whether we're talking about Washington or London or Paris and other Western countries, that they're showing for what is taking place, this unbelievable bloodshed that's taking place in the Gaza Strip. And of course, with the unbelievable hit on the hospital a few nights ago, and also the one of the oldest churches in the world also being hit and people being killed, I think that really people are saying enough is enough, and we're going to be looking at that on the Spotlight. My first guest is Saeb Shaff out of Belfast. And Zakir Ahmad Mayat out of Johannesburg. Thank you both for being with me on this program. Well, let's start off in Belfast. And Saeb, almost 4,400 Palestinians in Gaza have been killed in 2 weeks, and the bombings simply continue. How can this be allowed to continue to happen? And do you think that over the years, the media has played a major role in first dehumanizing Palestinians, which has opened the door to basically having a lot of these regimes look the other way and also affecting many of the people. How do you see it?
The reaction of the people on the streets of Western Europe and the United States of America can interpret one thing, that these people don't believe their media and their politicians. Today I was in Belfast in one huge rally, which was called in a short notice yesterday. And this week, maybe there was three massive demonstrations, hundreds of thousands of people. We've seen even the drone footage of London. It's hundreds of thousands of people in the streets of London. The same thing in Manchester, the same thing in Dublin. So the people are watching and live genocide is unfolding in live TV. And they heard what the Israeli soldiers were saying on their own national TV, with us. They are not going there to fight Hamas. They fight all the civilians. That, without doubt, that means the soldiers received orders to commit genocide in Gaza. And let's say, under international law, genocide requires two stages. One, intent to destroy a national or ethnic or religious or racial group. And the second stage is the attempt of destruction of that group. And then in the international law, with that intent, it means the action amount to ethnic cleansing. If it's deliberate, then it's considered genocide. And this is exactly what we see in both actions happening in Gaza. And in contradiction to international law, which prohibits collective punishment and the target of civilians, which both are actually amounts to war crimes or crimes against humanity. A few days ago, the president of the Zionist entity, Isaac Herzog, which he is from the Labour Party, the left, said the Gazans are not innocent civilians. It is an entire nation out there that is responsible. So he gives the green light, the head of the state, to destroy the whole population. And we heard, as you mentioned, the dehumanization of the Palestinian by Gallant, which is initiating a full scale of genocide. That the minute Gallant described the Israeli entity, defense minister, the Palestinians as a human animal, and then give the orders to cut water, electricity, fuel. This dehumanizing language, we remember it was used in the Second World War by Hitler when he described the Jews in Europe and some others as rats. And yeah. Then we know what happened after that. The same Nazi language and the same Nazi ideology they are using in Gaza today. Them who cry, they were the survivor, the grandsons or the sons of the survivors of the Holocaust, which
right.
We condemn.
Right. You know, Zakir, you heard what Saeb said. It is mind-boggling when we think that the excuse for the creation of the regime was the Holocaust. And yet, what we see taking place in 2023 and these bombs, powerful bombs, phosphorus bombs, and just hitting all these residential areas and hospitals and ambulances and not showing any kind of compassion at all. I mean, it's really mind-boggling when we think in such a short period of time and we're looking at such a tragedy that these same people then, or descendants of some of them, can do what they're doing and justify what they're doing.
I think it should not come as a surprise to those who are fully aware of the Palestinian situation. And the reason why I say this is because we are acutely aware of the fact that Israel is a colonial settler apartheid state. And when you consider Israel as a colonial state, it obviously follows through with colonial ideology. From the 15th century, the Spaniards had come up with this idea, particularly with African slaves, that these are a people without souls. The animal imagery was already created then. And it has been a fundamental part of colonialism. And then you see the same sort of imagery projecting itself, as my fellow panelist has referred to Yoav Gallant making the statement that we are dealing with human animals. But it wasn't just Yoav Gallant. It was Ayala Shaked, which referred to a post on her social media that referred to the Palestinians as snakes. The same imagery comes out with Daniel Weiner's article in 2021, where he says that if you fail to do mowing the lawn, meaning the periodic killing and brutalizing of Palestinians, then if you fail to do so, wheat will grow wild and snakes will begin to slither around in the bushes. This is the same type of thought that established the state of Israel, Menachem Begin, saying that the Palestinians are animals walking on two legs. So when you dehumanize, it's part of colonial ideology. And it is for this specific reason that we see colonial powers coming to the aid of Israel, the United States, the UK, Italy, France, and Germany. These are colonial powers. It comes as no surprise to me. What comes as a surprise to me, though, is that some of the Arab nations have dragged their feet. They have just provided lip service to the Palestinians when it should be the complete opposite. Those that are providing tangible support and changing an equation on the ground are those from the axis of resistance, al-Muqawama al-Islamiyah. We're seeing what's happening in Lebanon. We're seeing what's happening in Syria. We're seeing what's happening in Yemen with Ansar Allah. And we see what's happening in Iraq. That is practical support for the Palestinians, not mere lip service and having meeting after meeting while innocent people are being slaughtered on a daily basis. We are just providing lip service to try and appease our conscience. That needs to change.
Okay. I'm going to get back to what you mentioned, but I also want to look at the West Bank because, Saab, the situation there is horrible also, with more pre-dawn raids, more death, more destruction. At least 84 people have been killed there, with over 1,000 being arrested since October the 7th. I mean, your thoughts on the reason the regime is more out of control than ever, and do you think that this will backfire on it?
No, the regime is not out of control. The regime is acting according to a plan. And this plan, the Palestinian and Arabic and Islamic resistance put it on reverse. They were planning to have a Zionist entity, call it a Greater Israel, from the Nile to the Euphrates. And we witnessed what the Lebanese resistant Hezbollah inflicted on them in the year 2000 and 2006, defeated them and expelled them out of South Lebanon. The same thing the Palestinian did in Gaza in 2005. They expelled them out of Gaza, but then they put a massive, huge blockade and siege on Gaza. Nothing moves in and out of Gaza, which is in its own is a continuous war crime for the last over 17, 18 years. So there is a Zionist politicians, a member of Knesset, now calling for a second Nakba, referring to the massive court displacement of Palestinians in 1948 with the help of the British Empire and then establishing of Israel after expelling hundreds of thousands of Palestinians. Again, to deliberately create another Nakba, which means it targets the West Bank and it targets Gaza. In the West Bank, they want to push the people to Jordan. Okay, this is what is the Jordanian. And in Gaza, they want to push the people to Egypt. And this is what buckles the Egyptians and worries them. The politicians openly now in the Zionist entity talking about Nakba, which is that mean amounting to genocide, not only in Gaza, as well in the West Bank. And this is, we can see their action in the Nur Shams refugee camp in Tulkarim or in Jenin, or trying to put the Palestinians in the West Bank in three bondstands and besiege them worse than Gaza, and then push their majority outside to Jordan and let Jordan deal with them. And they grab the best of the lands of the West Bank, because today we have nearly 1 million settlers in the West Bank. And the settlers in the West Bank, they are calling their government to create the settlers' state in the West Bank today. So this is coupled with what's happening in Gaza. We can read this. The West is behind Israel totally to try to push for the creating of Greater Israel. But they are mistaken. They are failing even to protect themselves from Gaza. And the resistance within the West Bank, with all the costs incurred in Gaza or in the West Bank, are formidable, and it's moving to stop this project.
This is The Spotlight. The Spotlight takes an in-depth look at the headlines, featuring interviews with well-known guests from diverse backgrounds to get to the bottom of the story. You can listen to The Spotlight every day on IRIB English Radio.
Zakir, let's talk about the possibility of the expansion of this war. I mean, you mentioned Hezbollah because we know that some border areas in South Lebanon had been bombed, and Hezbollah has engaged in precise attacks on regime forces and their equipment. We also saw Ansar Allah fired rockets toward the regime, which were intercepted. And in Iraq, the U.S. Ain al-Assad base has been attacked. American forces also in Syria have been attacked. Your analysis of all of this?
So what we are sitting with at the moment is an equation that Israel finds itself in. And regardless of how you work this out, Israel is doomed. It's the end. We have spoken about this before on your show. And I've always said that Israel is about to implode. It's on its deathbed. And that there will be a regional war. However, I believe this is not going to be a regional war. I miscalculated before. This is going to be a global war. What we are seeing now is global parties intervening on behalf of Israel. There is an inevitability that if Israel continues with its massacres in the manner and fashion that it's currently going about, I think that we will start seeing different fronts opening up. The resistance, Al-Muqawama, has already sent signals that they are prepared to enter. We have seen senior commanders appearing along the border of Lebanon, the deputy of the Imam Ali Brigades, Abu Azrael, the commander of Khatib Sayyid al-Shuhada was spotted in Lebanon. So these are indications that this is going to be a multi-front war. Israel is finding itself in a very difficult position at the moment. Israel does not have an operational theory as to how to enter Gaza and commit their genocide. That is number one. Number two is that Israel is trying extremely hard to maintain all fronts because they cannot fight a two-pronged war. They can fight an offensive war in Gaza and a defensive war in the north, but they cannot manage a two-front offensive war. And this is the crisis that Israel finds itself in today. It is also the assessment of internal Israeli generals and their discussions is that if Hezbollah enters the battle, it will obliterate Israel. The U.S. air power can only go so far. Israel is not ready for ground war against Hezbollah. The United States does not have the assets to commit to a ground operation in Lebanon. And then you have the other problem with the eastern flank of Syria, the Golan, and Iraq, as well as Ansarullah. This only spells one picture, and that is the complete demise of the Zionist entity. That is why we are seeing them hold true to what they are, genocidal maniacs, and that is why they are fighting for their very existence. The embarrassing situation that they had to call in the United States to bring not one but two aircraft carriers and go to the United Kingdom and bring in the Royal Navy. The colonialists are fighting for their existence. The world will never go back to how it was before this war. This war is only beginning, and I believe at the end of it, we will see a world based on justice. There is no hope for the apartheid state as we see it.
Well, Saeb, how do you see it? Because what Zakir has described, I mean, when we look at, again, I want to look at these individual Western countries that they are continuing, of course, to support the Israeli regime. But there seems to be a growing divide between those Western regimes and the people on the ground. At the beginning of the show, we looked live at what is happening right now in Washington, D.C. We saw earlier today a huge demonstration in London. And, of course, this is taking place all over the world. I want to look at the possibility. Zakir talked about the demise of that regime, but I want to talk about even beyond that and how these Western regimes can be majorly affected by all of this.
2 days ago was a massive demonstration in the city of Belfast. Hundreds of thousands were in it. I addressed the demonstration myself, and I reminded the people who attended the demonstration with the lies and the fabrication of the United States of America and the British at the time, Tony Blair and George Bush, used to sell to the media and to the United Nations these lie fabrications for invading Iraq. About mass weapons of mass destruction and the rest. And the cost of that of these lies, how many civilians being killed, nearly amounted to over a million, how many children died from the sanctions in Iraq, which is the Americans' foreign minister at the time, Madeleine Albright, when they asked her ABC News, is it worth it, half a million a child to die from sanctions for what happens in Iraq? She still insists it's worth it. Live on TV, it's disgusting. And the people today, they witness as well, the United States of America is using what we call atrocity propaganda, especially about things proven wrong and proven total fabrication and lies, like beheaded babies and stuff. So, and coupled with that, the people lost faith in their government and in their political system. You can't see it in the streets. They don't believe. And they heard the United States of America, U.S. State Department, in fact, has warned the diplomats to stay away from phrases such as de-escalation and ceasefire. People are asking for the war to stop. And the American administration ordering its own diplomat to stay away from end the violence or bloodshed and restoring calm. These phrases are forbidden in the United States of America, while as well with U.S. and the collective West funding the genocide, which they are party to it today, and the people in the street, they see that from the taxpayers' money. Just a few days ago, Netanyahu came in a press conference bragging with the Romanian prime minister, who came to show support and to shore up the Zionist entity in behalf of the West as well. He said they fight in Gaza in behalf of the civilized world. And this man, the Romanian prime minister, didn't comment anything on that, even when he had the chance to say something or to answer for a question. So they prove to their own people they are complicit. But there is a huge gap now in the streets between the politicians, which they're going to pay for a price, because there is a group of activists who's led by some former MPs in the UK, taking some politicians from the British government to court for supporting ethnic cleansing or the idea of genocide. So these things are making the people today opening their eyes. But as my friend from South Africa said, they find themselves today, they're going to go for a global war, it seems. Okay. This is why they want to assure the state of Israel.
Okay, I only have just 1 minute. Zakir, your take on this PR transition, it seems, because Israel has always been very big, the regime, in trying to sell itself with as the most moral army, the only democratic entity in the region. But it seems to be losing that PR battle now. The importance of that, and where do you see it going? I only have 30 seconds, Zakir.
Israel has failed on its PR campaign. They have claimed self-defense, impossible. A concentration camp guard does not have the right of self-defense against those that he holds in the concentration camp, number one. Number two is that the global population can see the disconnect between the self-defense talk of Israel and the revenge that it is taking out on the Palestinian people. Massacre after massacre dismantles Israel's propaganda machine in front of the entire world, and it is being exposed for what it is, an apartheid settler colonial state.
And on that note, I appreciate both of you being with me on this spotlight. Saib Sheth, author and West Asia expert out of Belfast, and Zakir Ahmed Mayet, attorney, activist, and political analyst out of Johannesburg. And as always, we appreciate you being with us on another spotlight. I'm Marzia Hashimi.
The Limelight.
China has announced that its Belt and Road Initiative BRI infrastructure project has generated $2 trillion in contracts, signaling the mega project's success and popularity around the world. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. According to Global Times, the Belt and Road CEO Conference was held on October 17th, which is an opening event of the Third Belt and Road Forum for International Cooperation, BRF. With participation from over 80 countries and regions, including over 20 minister-level officials, more than 30 heads of foreign business associations, and nearly 60 representatives from Fortune Global 500 companies, the conference had over 1,200 attendees. The event has yielded remarkable achievements, whether it's the number of projects, the countries involved, or the contracted amount, they all exceeded the previous CEO conference. The conference issued the Belt and Road CEO Conference Beijing Declaration, emphasizing five key points: a commitment to open cooperation, deepening connectivity, promoting green development, advancing digital economic cooperation, and adhering to compliance and fulfilling social responsibilities. These points represent the consensus of entrepreneurs from various countries attending the conference. They not only reflect the representative spirit and principles of entrepreneurs in jointly building the Belt and Road Initiative BRI, but also provide a specific direction for future collective efforts. Against the backdrop of deliberate disruptions to the global industrial and supply chain systems, this declaration stands as a consensus statement from the global business community, demonstrating confidence in unity and cooperation and sending out a strong message of our time. The business community is a participant, contributor, and driving force in the BRI development. The enthusiasm of enterprises largely reflects the appeal and attraction of the BRI. The CEO Conference, as an innovative initiative of the second BRF in 2019, has provided a more vibrant platform for connecting and negotiating between Chinese and foreign enterprises. Recently, nearly 300 Chinese and foreign representatives signed agreements covering various fields such as infrastructure, clean energy, artificial intelligence, biomedicine, financial services, modern agriculture, and rail transportation. Enterprises will continue to play a crucial role in the BRI in the future. The BRI cooperation provides many entrepreneurs with opportunities and platforms to showcase their abilities. The Belt and Road CEO Conference called for more entrepreneurs to participate in the construction of this path of opportunities and prosperity, benefiting the world while achieving their own greater development. In addition to the Belt and Road CEO Conference, the Jakarta-Bandung high-speed railway officially began operations, marking Indonesia's entry into the era of high-speed rail. Chinese railway manufacturer CRRC Corp. also signed an agreement with Serbia's Transport and Infrastructure Ministry in Beijing to sell high-speed rail carriages to Serbia. The birth and implementation of these cooperative projects are inseparable from the nurturing of the BRI and the dedication of numerous enterprise builders. As Chinese President Xi Jinping emphasized when addressing a welcome banquet for guests attending the third Belt and Road Forum for International Cooperation, the achievements of Belt and Road Cooperation are neither a windfall nor made with others' almsgiving and charity, but are earned by governments and enterprises and the peoples of participating countries with their diligence, wisdom, and courage. Enterprises are the most active cells in the development of the BRI. As the BRI involves so many countries and faces different cultural customs, legal systems, and levels of development, the entrepreneurial spirit of building the Belt and Road must be open and inclusive. It is essential to respect local culture, abide by local laws and regulations, pursue win-win cooperation, and demonstrate a strong sense of social responsibility in serving the local people. At the same time, building the Belt and Road is also a process of extending economic globalization to a global scale. During this process, larger-scale world-class international enterprises will inevitably emerge or be created. Seizing the opportunity can lead to development and growth, and some enterprises may even achieve great accomplishments. Both enterprises and entrepreneurs need to have sufficient imagination to contribute to the success of the BRI. The BRI originated from China but belongs to the whole world. With the advancement of the high-quality construction of the BRI, more enterprises from participating countries as well as other countries have jointly constructed a more diverse and vibrant economic ecosystem for the Belt and Road. The foundation and the directions established for BRI cooperation over the past decade have increased the confidence of the business community, and the potential that the BRI may create in the future has ignited the passion of visionary entrepreneurs. Although there may be obstacles ahead, it will undoubtedly witness the blooming of more flowers. China Daily also wrote in this regard, "The Belt and Road Initiative, as it advances, will consistently yield substantial cooperation, investment, and growth opportunities for businesses on a global scale." And that is what senior government officials and business executives have recently said. Speaking at the Belt and Road CEO Conference of the Third Belt and Road Forum for International Cooperation in Beijing, they said that through such collaboration, Chinese and foreign companies can enhance their research capabilities, embrace cutting-edge technology, and refine their application expertise. These activities can potentially reshape their growth trajectory and play a pivotal role in fostering sustainable economic development. Vice Premier He Lifeng said at the conference that China is willing to expand mutual market access with countries involved in the BRI, create more trade cooperation platforms, build up a diversified financing system, deepen production capacity cooperation, and expand two-way investment. The vice premier stressed that China encourages businesses from all participating countries to actively promote cooperation in areas such as big data, artificial intelligence, and new energy. This will drive the development of BRI toward a greener, healthier, and more intelligent direction.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
The number of Palestinians killed in Israeli attacks on the besieged Gaza Strip is nearing 5,000, with most of the victims being women and children. Iran's President Raisi strongly condemns US President's pro-Israeli remarks as reactionary and inhuman, saying they prove the regime's fake nature. And people around the world take to the streets to condemn Israel's atrocities against the people of Palestine.